we've heard so much about the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico off the coast of Louisiana. It's tough to fathom how difficult it is for the people who live and work in that area. Even tougher to fathom is the ripple effect. In particular, the way that ripple effect might even affect our lives, including our health, right here in central New York. We hear from the media that it might. I have no doubt that's true, but I'm not really sure how all of that's going to happen. And that's why our next guest will be so fascinating to all of us, I'm sure. Let me introduce you to Dr. Gina Marafa, clinical toxicologist from Upstate's Poison Center and assistant professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Upstate. Well, good morning. Welcome, Dr. Marafa.
Good morning.
This has got to be a fascinating and maybe a worrisome time for you as well.
It certainly is.
I mean, I can't even imagine. Have you ever had an experience or been part of an experience like this before?
No, actually, this is fairly unique. And I think nationally this has never happened before to this capacity. So it really is an interesting chain of events that have been ongoing, where sometimes we're in uncharted territory and have a lot of questions, and sometimes more questions than answers.
Absolutely. And let's remind people that you are an expert in toxicology. So you're not an expert in oil spills necessarily, or even in currents or anything else.
That's right.
But definitely in how people get poisoned and how to take care of that. Well, I was listening to an interview on NPR this week. It was about the oil spill, problems with the dispersion chemicals and more. And one man stated that there were 35,000 oil drilling rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. That's an astounding number, don't you think?
I didn't actually appreciate the quantity either until this recent event.
And I had to wonder, I'm surprised actually now that this hasn't happened before now, you know? Anyway, Americans are somewhat familiar with oil spills from the Exxon Valdez back in 1989, but this one makes that one look almost minuscule, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
I know the Exxon Valdez ran into problems in Alaska. Different kind of shoreline, different kind of an effect on the environment there. And maybe not so much with the people part of the food chain.
That's right. So it's a different geographic location. We're dealing with a different area, obviously, in the Gulf of Mexico, with more people, more beaches, just different seafood patterns, consumption, and things.
Exactly. So let's talk about that, because that really, this is a big question of seafood, isn't it? This is a question about the food we might eat someday. Let's talk about how that works.
So I think that, normally when you think of something that's happening in the Gulf of Mexico, you don't necessarily think of a direct effect that it might have in our area, in central New York. But we really have to recognize that a lot of seafood that we consume every day perhaps may come from that particular geographic area. So it really, again, the quantity of this oil spill, and we don't exactly know how far it's going to go onto the coast. So we're really in uncharted territories as far as the areas of seafood that really might be off limits to us for a period of time, however long that period of time is.
And this isn't even just about the seafood. It's about the seafood we eat, but it's also about the whole food chain concept and how it's not just that a piece of shrimp gets some oil on it, you know? I mean, I suppose we all dip it in butter. You might say, what's the difference? Although I'm sure there's a difference. All right. But let's talk about how the food chain works.
So, you know, when you think about the food chain, you have generally smaller fish that will consume parts of, you know, algae and things in the ocean. And then you have those larger fish subsequently eating those smaller fish. So it really is somewhat of a smaller dose to a higher dose, and really affecting all areas of the food chain from that regard.
Right.
So, and then you think of other animals as well that are eating fish. So birds eat fish and things. So it might be a significant problem and really can affect multiple areas of the food chain.
It could. You know, and I look and I see pictures of some of the birds that are in the area. They're covered in oil. Or I see the turtles that are covered in oil. And that is a disaster in terms of the ecology of the area and the environment. But that's not really something that's going to directly affect us, is it?
No, I mean, it's certainly devastating the animals that are being impacted. When you see those pictures, it's almost horrifying to think of, you know, the potential it may have on them. But as far as I think our biggest risk in central New York would really be from the consumption of the seafood, which is why I think there's going to be very strict restrictions from any type of seafood that's obtained from that area, as well as other areas that it might disperse to over time.
You know, it makes me think a little bit. I know for many years, I think since I was a child, we've been told to avoid some larger fish like swordfish, some tuna and so forth because of mercury content. Is this the same kind of thing?
No, it's different. I mean, certainly we've been told to avoid larger fish because of mercury, but really not avoid it necessarily, but more minimize it. So, you know, limiting your exposure to, you know, once or twice a week, depending. Obviously, there's other factors that come into that, like if you're pregnant or things. But this is a different scenario. So this is exposure to the oil and then the chemicals that they're using for dispersants. So it's a little bit different. And again, I think that this isn't going to be about limiting exposure. It's really going to, we're not going to have that exposure to that seafood from that area for a period of time.
At all. Mm-hmm. But is mercury, I mean, I think of mercury in a thermometer. And so I think, okay, is it like the oil and the dispersant, these big chemicals? Is it the, where did that mercury come from? Was there a spill somewhere?
So that's a little bit different. It's really about the way that animals will, you know, eat different parts of, you know, the algae and things, and then have the larger fish eat the smaller fish. So it is very different. And I would think about those two in very different ways.
Is it mercury like we see in the thermometer, or is it some different kind of mercury?
Well, there's a lot of different, there's basically three different kinds of mercury that are out there. You know, generally speaking, when you think of mercury from when you eat seafood, I generally don't think of it as being all that toxic if it's done within a reasonable amount. So mm-hmm. one or two times a week. And obviously if you're pregnant, then that risk goes up a
yeah.
little bit. But
okay.
I think of it as being, you know, I certainly eat seafood yeah. or tuna once or twice a
but
week.
But it's not a chemical in the same way. Okay,
it's different.
We have about another minute. I wanted to ask you quickly about one concern, of course, is that they talk about the oil and the dispersant going mm-hmm. down and around the coast of Florida and then up the east coast of the United States. So if I go on a trip to Florida, do I have to worry about going out on the beach?
Well, so that all depends. So it depends on when you're going to Florida, mm-hmm. where you are. There really are significant amount of agencies that are really talking to each other every day. And so they're going to make it very clear of the areas of which you can go to and cannot go to.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we don't really know how far that this is actually going to travel. But people are watching it very closely. So they will tell you certainly when you can, where and when you can go back to a particular area.
And then you would want to avoid, when they tell you to avoid it, you want to avoid it because there are other problems. Not that you're going to eat the food, but rather that you could be irritated by, your skin could be irritated, or what, asthma problems too?
Right. So people who particularly have, you know, a history of asthma or some other lung problems, if you're exposed to particularly the area where there might be a lot of this oil spill mm-hmm. and things, it might make your asthma worse or might make your lung symptoms worse. And then even, you know, even if you get some oil on your skin, that can be pretty irritating as well to your skin.
Yeah.
So it would really be more direct contact. But again, I think people are going to give us that guidance as to where you can go mm-hmm. and what areas are off limit and
very
be very
good.
Clear about that.
And we will know. We will know the
That's
answers.
Right.
Well, Dr. Gina Marafa, toxicologist from Upstate, thank you so much. This has been an interesting conversation. We're going to hope that they get all of that contained and under control pretty soon.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Memorial Day, a somber celebration of gratitude, or honoring the past with a positive change in the present. Well, dear tuner-inners, every Memorial Day, I think about my Uncle Arlie Ryder, who at 20 years old, got married, joined the Army, shipped out to Europe, and then a few weeks later stepped on a landmine and died right before the end of World War II. I thank him especially, and his sister Lita, my mother, and their two brothers, Rich and Claire, and my father, Charlie, and his friends, and all the others who fought in that war that made everybody's lives better thereafter. But this most recent holiday was a little different. Uncle Arlie had a daughter he never met, Arla Jean, the oldest of all of us cousins. Even though we'd only seen each other a few times, she and I were close, deeper than reason, maybe because we looked like Arlie and Lita combined and could see them when we looked in each other's faces. But without warning, Arla Jean died this past fall. So this holiday, when I thought about her dad, I thought about her too, and her email to me 2 summers ago. Coming to the family reunion in July? Love to see you again. I didn't go. Family and work obligations. And I thought, I'll go in 2 years to the next reunion. I'll call her instead. But busy, busy, you know. So I didn't bask in her great smile. And we didn't see each other's big, or shall we say, noble writer nose. Or give and get that heartfelt hug. And I'm left with the pain of my regret. But you know, there's something useful about regret from past relationships. It can fuel positive change in current ones. So remembering that good times with friends and family are key to happiness, how about we take a peek at our relationships now and see how we're doing? And while we're at it, how about we check up on our three most central relationships with me, myself, and I? How we doing? Working too hard? Having enough fun? And remembering that healthy is also key to happy? We eating right? Squeezing in the workouts? Taking good care? Body holding up? Had the annual physical? After all, maybe the best way to honor someone's memory is to make more happiness for others and ourselves now. I'm Dr. Rich, Noble Nose O'Neill. Thanks for tuning in.